Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio, creating waves of awareness over the airwaves, via the internet, and by friends telling friends they care. Working in unity to promote homeopathy around the globe. Join us on Thursday as we explore Pet Health and Homeopathy, a show co-hosted by Homeopathy World Community founder and homeopath Debbie Bruck and Doctor of Veterinary Medicine, author and homeopath Christina Shambro. We invite you to comment and call in to contribute your questions. Let's go!
Okay. Hi, this is Debbie Bruck, founder of Homeopathy World Community, speaking with our regular series co-host, Dr. Christina Shambro, doctor of veterinary medicine. Today is February 2, 2012, and this is the show in a series where you can visit the live chat, comment, and call in to ask your questions. And that is exactly what happened for today's show. We had a listener call in and tell us all about her terrier, and we're going to go through that case today and learn how to take a case properly. We also recommend or suggest that you let other people know about these shows by tweeting on Twitter, putting it on your Facebook, sharing it in your email, or even embedding the show on your websites to share with your visitors. So Dr. Shambro is an adjunct faculty member of the Maryland Veterinary Technician Program, and she lectures widely across the country. We'll be telling you during the show about her website and the services that she provides. So today, we're ready to go. Christina, can you hear me? Maybe not. Hello, Christina.
Hi, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can, but for some reason we have somebody else on the line, and I'm going to check in with who that is in a minute. So were you able to hear my intro today?
Yes, I was. I could hear you fine.
Okay, great. So
not in addition to case-taking, we're going to be looking at creating a master symptom list and the value of that, and we're also going to be looking a little bit at Materia Medica.
Wonderful.
Maria sent in a case about her dog, Frodo, who's a two-year-old Tibetan Terrier. And they've had him for about a year and a half, and his problems are GI problems as well as itchy problems. And, of course, on this show, as any show, there's no way that we can actually treat somebody's animal and tell you what remedy to give, because that needs more in-depth training or more in-depth speaking with somebody. But what I'm doing is using Maria's notes to make comments on. So hopefully Maria is on the line and listening. And if she's not, she'll be downloading this, I know, and going through it. So it may help her select another remedy if she feels competent to do that. Or she may contact one of the many wonderful homeopathic veterinarians that are available on that you can find at theavh.org. Yes, Deb?
Hi. Well, we do have Maria on the line. So if you do have any questions as we go through the notes, and we have a whole series of notes. I've even posted it on the Homeopathy World Community website. If you go to the main page of Homeopathy World Community, you will see a lovely picture of Dr. Shambro.
And in a hat.
In a hat, because a sunny hat. You need to get out there in the garden. And you click that, it takes you to a page which gives you some background information. And then when you click to the group section, you can see all of the shows that we have done together, including today's show is up there, and you can follow the notes. So it might be
so, Maria, that would be very useful if you would go to the page that has the notes on it, because then you'll sort of see what I'm going to be talking about.
Okay.
So you can hear me directly, Maria?
I can.
Good. Excellent. And you heard me say we're not going to be able to actually come up with the remedy for Frodo by any means in half an hour.
Right.
So a couple of things. The first thing is that the GI problems were there when she got him, and he had also been very itchy, mostly his face, which started 2 months after he came to live with Maria. So he started with the GI problems and then had the itchy problems. In those first 2 months, Maria, did he get any vaccines?
No.
Okay. And were there any other changes that happened? I know you did some diet changes between the when you got him and he wasn't itchy and then when the itchiness started.
Yeah, there weren't any diet changes until actually almost a year after I got him.
Okay.
He
so
had
it
a very
2 months between GI problem and the onset of itching.
There was really no change other than he had come to live with me and he was already 5.5 months old. His trip here was really traumatic. He had terrible separation anxiety. And but there was nothing that I could pinpoint to what would have triggered his itchiness.
So there were no changes between when he came to live with you and 2 months later when the itching began?
No. Mm-mm.
And the itching, when you think about it in retrospect, hadn't been there during those 2 months?
Right. Right.
Okay.
Because so he got very itchy where he was, you know, biting himself and scratching and
but that
didn't
start
himself.
Until he'd been with you for a few months.
That's right.
Okay. So when we create the master symptom list, and then the other is I would ask a whole lot more questions, and we may go back to this if we have time. So in creating the master symptom list, which I really, the reason I wrote the book called The Healthy Animal's Journal is that holistic approach is looking at the whole animal, regardless of what treatments you use, whether they're diet change, conventional, or homeopathy. And so it's important to have a list, a master symptom list. And so we'll start now as we go through here. And symptom number one is diarrhea. Number two is itching. And then Maria said that for a young dog, he has very little stamina, seems lethargic, although he has bursts of energy and may run like crazy for 5 to 10 minutes, but then he will lie down. And then she also said that he's intolerant of the heat and loves cold weather, hates the rain, hates wet pavement. So after a rain, when the sun is out, he won't walk. He's always inside. And if she stops to talk to somebody while they're on a walk, he usually lies down, even in the summer when the road is very hot. And he often sleeps on his back, especially when he's hot. So symptom number three will be his energy level. And it is significant. It does seem like he has low energy level from what you describe.
Mm-hmm.
And it does seem like the being willing to, how long would he lie down on the road when it's really hot out?
As long as I'm talking to somebody.
And does he could start panting? Does
he
start panting or being bothered by the heat?
No, I mean, lying on the hot road doesn't increase his panting.
Okay. And in the cold weather, will he go for a longer walk?
Yeah, definitely.
Okay. So those are, you see how you get more specific. The more specific you can get, the better. So number four would be seeking cold, and number five on the symptom list would be being averse rain and being averse wet pavement. Now back to the seeking cold, Maria commented that because he's a Tibetan terrier, he has a thick hair coat, and of course he also comes from Tibet, which is quite cold much of the time. We don't use the breed or the thickness of the hair coat to eliminate a symptom, to say, well, it's because of the long hair coat that he likes cold, any more than we say it's because a cat or dog is old that they can't jump up or are senile or are having cataracts or any other symptoms. However, when you have a dog like a Tibetan Terrier that in general they do prefer to be cold, you're going to put less emphasis on the fact that he seeks cold, you still would want a remedy that prefers cold, but it doesn't have to be super strong. So that's the way you look at that kind of a symptom as you're deciding what rubrics to look up in the repertory. Then Maria says that he's extremely willful and stubborn, and even on days when he agrees to go out for a walk, he will often just stop and won't budge. She either has to pull him or turn around and go home. But if he does agree to walk, they'll walk 2 miles a day. He's loving, affectionate, loves people and all dogs, doesn't have a mean bone in him. He loves to play with toys and chew his antler or nylabone. So dogs who are loving, affectionate, and friendly, these are fairly normal, common symptoms for dogs. And most dogs tend to be that way. So you wouldn't be thinking about, oh, this dog needs pulsatilla because he prefers cold and is loving and affectionate. If, however, you had a dog that those first 2 months when she had him was grumpy and irritable and standoffish and then started itching and became loving and affectionate, then the loving and affectionate would be significant because it happened after the onset of symptoms. Now, of course, she didn't have him before the colitis, so it still could be a symptom, but we can't use it at this point because we don't know that it's a change. When we're thinking about willful and stubbornness, is the walk the only thing he's willful and stubborn about, or are there other things, like in the house, sitting down, or is
Well, you know, like for most dogs, when you ask them if they want to go for a walk, they get excited and wag their tail. Frodo will just sit and look at me and not budge.
Right.
When I ask him if he wants to go for a walk. I mean, this is,
but
you know,
other than around walks, is there any other way that he's stubborn?
No, I think he's pretty compliant. I mean, I've taught him tricks, so I would say he's somewhat agreeable to learning. It just has something to do more with wanting to go outside when I think he should go outside and walks.
What about just going outside to go to the bathroom?
I sometimes have to coax him to go outside to go to the bathroom.
Would he go in the house if you didn't coax him outside?
No. He would hold it forever.
I'm laughing now.
It seems, you know, there seems to be an issue about inside and outside, whether cold or warm. Temperature, I don't know anything about seasonally, but if it's only one aspect of the way he reacts to going out, going for a walk, or going to the bathroom, how would you determine? To make a determination that the disposition is willful or stubborn, you would need to see it in a number of different areas of the pet's life.
Exactly. Well, to put a lot of emphasis on it, you would have to see it, and that's why I was asking, are there other things? Are walks the only place where he's willful and stubborn? So very good, Debbie. You picked right up on why I was asking that question.
And so what about barking? What about barking? I mean, I don't know too much about how they would respond, but
he's not much of a barker. He'll just bark at the UPS truck or something like that.
He with strange dogs?
Oh, we love strange dogs. He goes up to everyone.
Okay.
So, you know, one remedy that sort of pops into our mind at this point, and when you're taking a case, it's important to not ignore remedies that pop in your mind, but write them in the margin so that you get them sort of out of your mind and they aren't prejudicing you to taking the rest of the case, but that you don't forget them. So one remedy I'm already thinking of has willfulness and stubbornness, even though we're saying that's not as important here because in all other ways he's not willful and stubborn. And it has a combination of GI problems along with skin problems, and sometimes they'll have bladder problems, so that triad of organ systems. What remedy do you think I'm thinking of, Maria or Debbie?
I'm not going to chime in because I think I've already written it on the notes.
Right, that's right. So lycopodium is the one. that's right. in my mind.
And was and does that also have the itchy skin and the diarrhea?
That's what I said. It has skin problems,
okay.
GI
okay.
problems, and or urinary tract problems, often happening at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
Can I chime in for a second? There's another example of stubbornness, because I know he's really stubborn. So when he's in the car and we come home, he won't get out of the car unless I lure him out of the car.
Hmm.
What happens if you just leave the door open and you go up on your porch?
Well, I actually wouldn't do that because he would be in a driveway where he'd be insecure, so I
okay.
wouldn't just leave the door open. But I have left, he rides in a crate because I think it's safer for him to be in a crate. I have left the crate door open, and if I go back, you know, 15 minutes later, he's come out of the crate, but he's still in the car.
Mm-hmm.
And it's almost like a game with him.
Mm-hmm. But you mentioned an important word, that insecure. What is that about?
Well, if I live, you know, in the woods, and if I don't know if he would come to the house or not, if I left the car door open and he just came out
it's
of the car.
It's her insecurity, Debbie.
I'm listening to the insecure part of it, though.
But it's her insecurity, not his insecurity.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
okay.
And it could be fearfulness.
That's what I'm
rather
I'm
than
thinking.
Being willful and stubborn, Maria, do you
uh-huh.
think he could be afraid to go outdoors, afraid to go on walks?
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think so. Mm-mm. I mean, because, you know, if the conditions are just right, he's a very happy camper.
He's a very what?
Yeah, as long as happy camper.
Okay, to go on a walk.
If the conditions are right. Yeah.
What are the conditions that you're talking about?
Well, if the pavement's dry, like this morning he wouldn't go for a walk because the pavement was wet. But if the pavement's dry and it's a nice, cool day, he'll go for a walk.
Mm-hmm.
Although he'll still stop when he wants to stop, and then, you know, I have difficulty making him continue.
Mm-hmm. It's very interesting, Christina. How do you feel about this?
Well, it's just... The thing you do in homeopathy when you're case-taking is you elicit as much information as you can, and then you sit down and go over all the symptoms you've collected, and you put your most emphasis on persistent symptoms, symptoms that are clear and that you can understand what they are, that you can actually count on when you look them up in the repertory, that is what they are. Dr. Pitcairn has... For years, I'm not sure where he is now about this, but for years, he didn't really like to use behavior issues at all with dogs and cats because he felt it was really impossible to know which rubrics to use. On the other hand, Dr. Levy, who started at the same time as Richard and I, uses emotional symptoms a lot. And whether we agree with him in a class or not, he's very clear on his interpretation of them. I use emotional symptoms in animals when they are clear, and I don't use them when they're not clear. So at this point, I would not use Frodo's emotional symptoms to look up the remedy. However, it could help me decide between one remedy or another. Just like with the coldness, that may lean me towards one remedy or another, but I'm not going to repertorize and lean a lot on it because he is a Tibetan Terrier.
I agree, Christina. I mean, listening to the story, I don't feel personally secure in saying that the dog is willful, stubborn, or perhaps insecure, fearful, or particular about the weather. I mean, there's
oh,
so
he
many...
is particular about the weather.
Right, but I mean...
But
those...
we can't repertorize that.
Yes, so this was my not sure of how to repertorize and select the correct rubrics. So you're saying that...
Just wouldn't use it.
Wouldn't use it. Just use the things that are absolutely secure on...
Clear cut.
Yep. Okay.
And then the others are used in two ways. One is to see how the animal is responding to treatment, and two... as the flavor of the remedy to lean you towards one remedy or another remedy. as opposed to the looking up. It's the point where you're reading about them in the Materia Medica. And then Maria did something very smart. When you have a dog with colitis, one thing to try is different foods to see if the foods are causing the problem. So she switched him from raw food to taste of the wild salmon kibble along with pumpkin at each meal, and Gastroplex, which is slippery elm bark, and sometimes a probiotic. So this is an example of palliation. There are three ways, and we'll be talking about this next week, three ways animals respond to treatment and people: cure, palliation, and suppression. When we're going for treating an animal with homeopathy, there are often symptoms that we don't want the animal to have to suffer with, nor ourselves to suffer with. And so we use palliative treatments to temporarily help these symptoms until we feel we're moving towards a cure. And then we stop the palliative treatment to see if we really are moving towards a cure and have impacted the vital force or not. And if not, we put him back on the palliative treatments and then try some more. And when I say palliative, these aren't like bad palliative treatments. These are just more supportive, soothing. I call them soothing treatments. Now, I feel that any animal with digestive problems does need to be on a probiotic. My favorite is Mitomax, which is a whole different probiotic. It's called Pediococcus acidolactoli. And the thing I like about it is it's effective at the pH of 1 that dogs and cats have, and it doesn't break down in shipping even if it gets very hot.
So can we use this for equine as well?
Yes, they have an equine product as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And they also have it for people and birds and fish.
So that's Mitomax, M-I-T-A?
M-I-T-O-M-A-X. If you go to my website, My Healthy Animals, I think I've got it on the home page, but it's certainly on the My Favorite Products page.
Okay.
So that's just my favorite. It's not that it's going to make a – it may or may not, but it'd be unlikely to make a huge difference. It is also very good for itchy animals, particularly when the itching is from anxiety or if the diarrhea is from anxiety. Dogs who are boarded at a kennel – I talked with a veterinarian who boards dogs, and she said 50% of dogs boarded at her hospital when it's busy or full or noisy or sort of stressful – get diarrhea, and instead of antibiotics, she could just put them on Mitomax and they'd be fine by the time they went home. So it's good to use that. And one thing I would encourage that I didn't write down is instead of slippery elm, I would use marshmallow root. To make slippery elm, they cut down elm trees and use the bark. To make marshmallow root, they grow an annual plant called marshmallow and use the root of it. So marshmallow root is more gentle for the animals and sustainable. Slippery elm is not sustainable. It kills trees.
Is there a veterinary company that makes marshmallow root for pets?
Oh, you can get it. You can get it at your health food store, or you can go to Animals Apothecary, which is under Animal Essentials, and they have a nice product called Phytomucil, which has – actually, they do have some slippery elm in there, but they get it as a secondary. It's not cutting down trees for it, and it has marshmallow root in it.
Metamucil? It's like Metamucil?
Phyto. It's called Phytomucil.
Phytomucil. I was – okay.
Phyto meaning plant.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
So that's one that I like. Then we have an unusual symptom. He usually drinks water after he's eaten his kibble. His thirst varies. Often after a walk in the heat, he doesn't drink, which surprises Maria. And that is unusual, but again, it's not something that we can necessarily repertorize. So on the master symptom list, we have thirst after eating, not after a walk.
Very interesting.
Then Maria says he's taken a host of remedies, arsenicum, belladonna, calc carb, aloe, sulfur, and maybe some others. Now, in terms of looking at Materia Medica, when I look at these remedies, I notice some differences about them. Arsenicum album, one of the biggest keynotes about arsenicum album is that they're chilly, profoundly chilly. They're better from the heat. They hate the cold. They are fearful. Their symptoms are usually worse after midnight. Now, we haven't interacted enough with Maria to be clear-cut on, you know, that maybe some of the parts of arsenicum would fit. But in general, arsenicum does not fit him so well. Belladonna, we'd be looking for bright red skin, preferring cold, stubborn, full of energy, lots of explosiveness, some anger, some, doesn't have to be there. You could just have the redness and the fever, or you could just have epilepsy, or you could have, but I'm just giving you the flavor of the remedy.
Very acute, strong.
Well, even long term, I had a case of that responded really beautifully to belladonna that was a skin problem where the skin was bright red. It would just flare up in different parts of it. The ears or the back or the belly would be bright red. And the dog had this characteristic of being so strong, and he wasn't that big a dog, that he actually dislocated his owner's shoulder because he pulled so hard on the leash all the time. And after belladonna, he stopped pulling on the leash. It wasn't, and she had done the appropriate obedience classes and everything. So it's got that flavor to it. Calcarea carbonicum, certainly a possibility. Calc carbs don't like change. They definitely are one of the remedies that don't like to get their feet wet, don't like to walk in wet grass. In general, calcareas tend to be more on the chilly side, but it's not super strong like arsenicum. Aloe is a major digestive diarrhea remedy, especially diarrhea with gas spluttering out at the same time. Personally, I've never had any impact any time I've used aloe. Not true for other homeopathic vets, but just personally, I've never yet seen any impact, good or bad, from aloe.
No effect.
Sulfur does seem to fit in many ways. Sulfur has the stubbornness, the seeking heat, the friendliness, outgoing, happiness, reddish skin. She talks about it being pink at one point. So there's a lot that do point to sulfur. I usually expect something about sulfur to be smelly, the stool to be smelly or the skin to be smelly or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Maria then goes on to say the itching seems worse when he wakes up in the morning and after eating. So that, again, would point away from arsenicum, but it would be a good symptom to add to our list. Skin, itching, worse in the morning and after eating. Those would be good rubrics. His coat is very healthy, very shiny. He still has some separation anxiety. When I leave him, he sits by the door the entire time. So there definitely are, you know, there is that little bit of anxiety that we can add in. But, again, it's hard to look that up. The rubric for that is mind desires company aggravated while alone, or mind fear of being alone, or mind forsaken, as if they were going to be abandoned.
Mm-hmm.
Those are a few of the rubrics you could look at. And then he has a little discharge from his left eye, but not the right. The left eye has very little pigment. Black rim is not complete, and the skin on his face is quite pink. So the pigmentation is just how he was born, unless has he lost that, Maria, over time, or that's
no.
Just how he always is?
Yeah, it never filled in.
Okay. So we don't, that is probably meaningless. So we can use symptom 8, discharge in the left eye. And often we will see, after vaccines, we'll see a change in coloration on the skin, and that is significant. Or orange cats, as they get older, will develop black spots, and that's significant because it goes away when we treat them. The skin on his face being quite pink, that's like because of his itchiness?
I think at the beginning, didn't you say something about not liking the muzzle on his face?
Well, he doesn't. I don't remember saying that, but he doesn't like a muzzle on his face.
He said his face was itchy.
Yeah, his face has always been pink.
So it's, you know, pink whether he's been scratching it or not.
Yeah, it certainly gets pinker when he's stressed. Like, you know, when I first got him and I would take him to the groomer to be groomed, his face would be amazingly pink, like he was just totally stressed out.
Okay.
But it's always, I would
but
say,
not the rest of his body,
pink.
Just his face.
Well, you see it more in his face because the hair is thinner there and it's white. You know, where he's got black hair, he's got gray skin and not white skin. Or
right.
Pink
what
skin.
About his belly?
You know, I can't say that I ever really looked.
Okay.
On his belly.
Sure. So then the next is itching and colitis are related. So symptom number 9 is colitis with skin problems. And I take it the skin did not get any better when you did the diet change that helped the colitis.
It didn't, no.
Right, okay. He hurt himself in the dog park, ran into a bench, did something to his right leg. He's re-injured his leg, but that happened in several months. Gave him Ruta and Arnica. How well did he respond to the Ruta and Arnica?
He responded quite well. I think it was a soft tissue injury, and he responded very well to it.
Okay.
And he fortunately hasn't re-injured it now in a while.
So Arnica is best used for blunt trauma, soft tissue injury, when there's bruising. The keynote of Arnica that you want to be looking for is that they are so sore they really don't want to be touched or approached. Then you get a beautiful result with Arnica. She buys an expensive medicated shampoo. I would stay away from medicated shampoos. And expensive shampoos, I would use just plain dog shampoos that are, you know, herbal, holistic, that are very mild. And certainly you don't want to do something like a tar and sulfur shampoo, which could be suppressive.
Yeah, this one has primrose oil in it, the one that
that's okay. But, again, if it's real expensive, probably it's not going to – shampoos aren't going to cure a skin problem. So the reason for shampoo is to decrease odor, to decrease hair loss, or, you know, to get rid of all the hair with a bath, to soothe the skin. So oatmeal baths, just plain, a mild herbal shampoo that's not expensive would be fine.
Okay.
And remember, once he's healthy, healthy dogs never need a bath. So if your dog needs a bath, that means your dog isn't healthy. I mean, we know Frodo's not healthy, but I'm speaking for other dogs.
What about, you know, I'm sorry. I was going to ask about, for humans, we put skin cream on to soften our skin. Do we do anything like that for animals?
They don't usually get dry skin like that because they're usually drinking enough. It's people who don't drink enough to stay hydrated, and we drink coffee, which dehydrates us. I did have a Saluki, in New York City, and both the owner and the dog had to take baths to rehydrate their skin, but they just did it in water. They didn't do, you know, nothing else helped other than immersion in water. And then finally, silica was the remedy that worked the best with that dog, off and on with Pulsatilla and a few other remedies. But we helped a lot with that.
So I don't bathe him because of odor. He gets bathed because his undercoat mats so easily. And if he's bathed, if his coat is very clean, he mats less, which is why we bathe him so often. Is that not a good reason to bathe him?
Well, you know, I don't think that healthy Tibetan Terriers mat really badly as long as they're groomed regularly. I mean, by that I mean daily. It's
brushing.
Not a bad reason to use a shampoo, but I would then add the symptom in of
Here's
matting, of hair tangling.
Oh, right. Yeah, I mean, his hair really tangles.
Yep. Well, that would be another symptom then.
Mm-hmm.
Because a healthy dog's hair coat would not tangle that much, or cat, dog or cat.
Hmm. Okay.
What potencies of the sulfur did you use?
We started at 200 and ended up at 1 mL.
So the 200 helped, but then the 1 mL did not?
The 200 helped, and then it stopped working for a while, and then the 1 mL helped, and it stopped working after a while.
And when you
so
say after a while, were you repeating it?
I can't now remember how I did the sulfur because it was like, you know, a year and a half ago.
Mm-hmm.
you know, and this is with a homeopathic vet. This is not like doing it on my own.
Uh-huh. Okay. Who are you working with?
Dr. Loops.
Dr. Loops?
Charles Loops. Dr.
Yeah.
Charles
Loops. Okay. Because he often uses LM, so, although not necessarily.
Well, he has been getting LMs, but the sulfur never went to an LM.
Okay.
The sulfur was the lower potency.
Okay. One of the reasons to know if you have a good reaction to a remedy, that it's actually digging in and helping, is that if you have it, that it helps maybe part of the case, but not everything, like maybe the colitis got better on sulfur, but not the skin, then you would want to pick a remedy that follows sulfur, that has more skin than sulfur does, or vice versa, whichever it helped. Or if you have a remedy that helps and then stops helping after you go up to higher potencies, I probably would have gone on up to 10M since the 1M did help and then stopped helping, because Kent says never to leave a remedy unless keep going up in potency until the remedy no longer works, even on the first dose. So that would have been another possibility. And a book I like for that is Raymond's Relationship of Remedies, because it's a whole book on the relationship of remedies. It's excellent. Kent's repertory, of course, does have a table of relationship of remedies in the back, but it's just simply listed in a table with follows well, complements, inimical, antidotes, and duration. Ignore duration. But Raymond's book has even speaks about what a particular remedy that follows is good for. So if we went to sulfur, for instance, and then looked to see what remedies followed, it would say like aconite, measles, when in protracted gout, sulfur is followed by an aggravation in symptoms, give aconite. So it tells you a lot more. So that's why I like his book.
Christina, I have a question about that potency. Besides going either up higher to 10M or an LM potency, what about going low to the 6X or 6C? Would that address on the physical level any of this Frodo's problems?
I do not find that. The idea of potency, there's all these theories out there. Use high for emotional, use low for physical, use low to make the abscess drain, high to make the abscess go away. That, to me, is something that practitioners have learned as sort of a little hint, but you shouldn't base things on that. More, your goal is to find the remedy that matches, and then you want to find the potency that matches the best. So you want the potency to match the volatility of the symptoms and the animal. So when you have a young animal, you're usually going to use higher potencies. When you have an older animal, you'll usually use lower potencies more repeated. When you have more physical changes, more pathology, then you'll go lower. When you have functional, like skin itching, then you'll go higher. So in general, now I'm just saying that's in general where you want to make that match. However, I know Miranda Castro treated my daughter, and we found what we thought was the remedy, and we played around with 30C, 200C, 1M, and finally we went to 100C, and it was curative.
My goodness.
And I know there's a case of an old dog with heart failure that they gave two doses of Aurum Metallicum 6C, and the dog lived for another year and a half. So I any potency, if you have the right remedy, can work. If you're not so sure, we'll do a whole show on potencies. If you're not so sure about which remedy is the right match, then you want to go a little lower, because lower potency remedies have more of a scatter effect. I kept a 16-year-old cat. We did 6X Arsenicum Album and then 6C, and it was being given daily, twice a day, then 6C daily. And for renal failure, and that cat lived another 5 years before all of a sudden a bunch of symptoms showed up and he died in 2 weeks.
Fascinating. Wow. Yes, yeah. to have a show on potency would be great. Did you want to finish up with this?
Well, the only thing that's left is the next steps, and one would be to look for any other symptoms, to go through some of the questions we've talked about here, and then, of course, repertorization and selecting the remedy would be next. And again, I was thinking of lycopodium, but now mm-hmm. that Maria has spoken with us,
mm-hmm.
It doesn't sound like there's really that much stubbornness, so it's still a possibility because of the concurrency of the diarrhea and the skin, but, you know, I'd need to ask a lot more questions. The other point I want to make here is Maria's been working with a homeopathic veterinarian and hasn't made the progress. If you're ever working with a homeopathic veterinarian or a homeopathic practitioner for yourself, and you're not making the progress that you want after really giving it enough time, move to somebody else. I frequently refer people to other veterinarians when I'm stuck or other lay practitioners because
they might have a different viewpoint.
They might have a different perspective.
Mm-hmm. Well, this has been an awesome show. I really want to thank you, Maria, for sharing your situation with us, with Frodo, and for Christina for reviewing this case and teaching us really how to ask questions, how to look carefully, how to be objective, and to find rubrics that will really pinpoint where to go in the selection of remedies.
And good luck, Maria. I would probably go to another homeopath at this point.
Well, I think I'll go to you.
Okay, well, that's fine, too.
You've already half taken it.
Right, that's right. Where do you live?
Okay, we can do that on off air.
Right.
And so what I want to do is let folks know that they can put reminders on these shows. They can tweet it. They can share it on Facebook, in their emails, embed the show onto their website if they love pets and want to listen, have their friends listening to these shows. Please just do what Maria did and send us a message, and we will talk about your situation so that everybody can learn when somebody when their pet has a difficult time, and we can evaluate how to approach these kinds of situations for your healthy pet. Up next will be on Monday night, facial analysis with Grant Bentley at 8 p.m. Eastern Time, and then on Wednesday morning at 11 a.m., Dr. Otto and Heart Health. He has run the gamut from thyroid problems to exercise to we just did a show on eating for your blood type. So we have a variety. And then, of course, we have Thursday, Alan Phillips with Vaccinations and Your Rights and Dr. Christina Chambreau at 1 p.m. on Thursdays. We're going to end today's show, and we hope to see you next week. Thank you so much. Thank you, Christina.
You're welcome. Have a great week, everybody.
Thank you for listening to Pet Health and Homeopathy on Homeopathy World Community Blog Talk Radio with homeopaths Debbie Brook and Dr. Christina Chambreau. We encourage you to follow our show, click the reminder button to receive email notices when show airs, share with friends on Facebook and Twitter, and send in your comments and questions. See you next time.